It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 235, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, ChatGPT searches, digital license plates, and social media trends.
Hey, Gary, how's it going this week?
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm here. You know, it's like I've been saying, it's another week. Life goes on. We haven't talked about AI nearly enough. You have something to start with.
Yes. Well, you know, since our last episode, ChatGPT quietly, or somewhat quietly, gave us their search engine. So the way you use ChatGPT to search the internet is, if you have, I'm not sure how it looks on the web. I haven't used the web version in a while, but in the apps now, there's a little button at the bottom of the, you know, where you type your prompt that looks like a little globe. And when you click on that, you can, I guess you click on it twice, or you just click on it and it switches to search.
Yep.
And then you could basically do an internet search instead of using Google or DuckDuckGo or Bing, whatever you want. You can use ChatGPT to search. Now, it works a little differently because it's giving you the results inside of ChatGPT. I guess there's two main differences. One is the prompt seems kind of preloaded to, like, give me web pages that will tell me about, you know, and that's what the results are. Because it seems like a normal ChatGPT, like, result. It just doesn't give you, like, a search page, you know, like Google does.
Okay,
it actually, yeah, is kind of verbose. and it does, but it does give you a bunch of links to things, and it describes, like, the page. But the other thing it's doing, of course, is these are, you know, these are current web pages. You know, one of the things about ChatGPT is that's always months behind in terms of information. So it, you know, isn't very good for asking about current events. But this case, the search engine data seems to be, as you would expect, to be recent. It's very good. It does give you search results. We talked before about Perplexity.
Right.
Which you brought up, and it's definitely, it's head to head with Perplexity in terms of, like, what it's doing. Perplexity,
right.
They both try to kind of give you an answer if you've asked a question.
Correct.
But they both give you links and references and stuff. It is interesting though, and I've seen tons of articles saying, you know, is this the end for Google and all that? And the one thing that Google has that these don't is it has the placement in the browsers. Like, you can use the search bar at the top of browsers to either search with Google, like in Chrome, for instance, or Safari on the Mac, or obviously the competitors like Bing have the search, I guess default in Edge and other, you know, other places. I'm not sure what Firefox's default is, to tell you the truth. It might
be Google. DuckDuckGo.
Oh, it is? Okay, so there's the major, three big ones. And there are a couple other ones, too, that are allowed into that arena. But until, like, you know, there's like a wall now, I feel, between, like, search engine you can easily use in the browser without thinking about it,
right,
and these new search engines like Perplexity and ChatGPT search that you have to go into the domain of the AI, you know, that web page or that app to use them. It's interesting. It's like, will there always be this divider line here? Will it change? I mean, I don't know. I think Google is in trouble if it changes. If you have the ability to, if like Firefox were to go and say, we're just going to use ChatGPT search from now on, and then it's like, oh, then they got a big foothold, and then maybe Apple adds them to the list of ones you can change to, you know, and it's like it encroaches on that territory.
So of course, while you were chatting, I asked ChatGPT, and said, yes, you can set ChatGPT search as your default search engine in Google Chrome, which is what I asked, by installing the official ChatGPT search extension. So that's kind of sideways. But what I was thinking about is that there's nothing magic about being a search engine, a default search engine in any of the browsers. All it really means is that you have to support a specific kind of URL-based query.
Right.
If you just if we were able to say, chatgpt.com question mark s equals followed by your search query, that's all it would take.
Yeah, so it comes down to like what can you set in the settings and how can you break the barrier of like the everyday user, and I mean the first step is to make yourself available in that list,
By
right?
the way, since I asked it that question about using it as a search in Google Chrome, there's also a pop-up that it gave me, a small one, not, an inobtrusive one, that says use ChatGPT for every search. Download the Chrome extension with a button to click to get the extension.
Yeah.
So if you ask about it, it will not only tell you the
That's good.
answer, but encourage you to actually do it.
Interesting. I mean, I think it makes Google very vulnerable right now.
It sure seems like it
Like,
would.
I mean, so let's say, all right, you've got Chrome is, I'm not sure what the biggest web browsers are now. Chrome's obviously a big one.
Chrome's number
Safari's the
one.
big one, but only on Apple.
Right.
Right. But that includes the iPhone, which makes it huge, actually. And then you've got Edge, which is the default on Windows. So, and then that's probably the big three, really, when it comes down to it. If there are extensions available for each of those, it would only take a major marketing campaign on the part of ChatGPT or a partner to really push things. I mean, because like you said, you got that, when you asked ChatGPT, you got, hey, install this to do it. So what would it take, considering the money talked about in AI circles is in the billions all the time? What would it take for a ChatGPT or a partner to go step forward and say, let's bring this to everybody. Let's
Right.
do a major campaign, hit them with ads online, hit them with ads on TV, everywhere. And take a bigger and bigger chunk, considering what's, at stake.
What
I don't know. It could be
I
interesting.
find interesting is that I wonder if there's a certain amount of reluctance on the AI companies to do this, to make them the default yet. And I say that because we're still dealing with hallucinations. And no matter how much you quantify or qualify the answer you give, the answers could still be wrong. Now, I'm not saying that Google search-based answers are always right either. They have a different set of problems.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just wondering if that's part of what's keeping them from jumping off this edge. Interestingly, again, while you were talking, I asked ChatGPT what the current browser market share is. Google Chrome, 2/3. And then Safari,
Two
18. Yeah, 2/3.
thirds.
Safari's at
Wow.
18%, and then Edge at a little over 5, Firefox at 2.5, and then Samsung Internet, of all things, at 2.23, and Opera at 2.2.
Yeah, I think another barrier too might be energy cost. Like, how much does it
Oh,
cost Google to serve up a results page versus how much does it cost ChatGPT to do it?
That's a really good point.
So, there might be ways, I mean, to mitigate that. I mean, obviously, a prompt in AI and large language model AI is expensive in terms of energy, but if they wanted to go big on search, there might be caching and other things that they could do to maybe lower the cost, but specifically for web searches. I mean, if you take the top 1,000 web searches and cache them, right? What percentage is that going to be, in any given time? So,
Well, to be fair, the number one web search, as I if I recall correctly, is Facebook.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
What it is, I mean, it's people using the address bar, quote unquote, incorrectly, right? They're just typing in Facebook, in order to go to Facebook without realizing that they're first getting a search engine result and then they have to click on the link.
Yeah. It's
But that could be
interesting.
cached. That could be cached easily.
It's interesting. I guess the thing is now that we see that, these large language model AIs can be used as search engine because there's at least two of them, probably more, which is interesting because it was so hard to enter the search engine market before. Like you had companies, like a lot of companies are basically piggybacking either on Google or Bing. Right. As like, so Google and Bing are expending the energy to actually create the search index to actually, figure out what's there and have the database. And then other search engines jump on top, do some modifications. There are a few other ones experimenting in that, but it's tough. Whereas, so now all of a sudden you've got these other search engines coming in. I don't know. It could be a shakeup or it could be nothing, right? We could, and 3 years from now, we could just be doing the same web searches and have this alternative like Perplexity
My
and
sense is
ChatGPT.
that it's actually a shakeup. We've been down this road a couple of
Yeah.
times, right? It used to be Yahoo, then it was AltaVista, then it was Google, and Google held on for quite some time. But it's not that people's behavior can't be changed if there's incentive to do so. What I suspect, we're going to go either of two ways, right? Either OpenAI's ChatGPT search will start to come up. Or Perplexity will, or maybe there's a third AI-based search engine we haven't seen yet. Or, and this is honestly part of what I kind of sort of hope happens, Google will clean up their act.
Yeah.
Google will actually address some of the problems that are causing people to use them less frequently. And I mean, they've got their own LLM as well, right? They can do the
Yeah.
AI as well on top of it. So right
Gemini,
now,
yeah.
I think from Google's perspective, it's not a lack of technology, it's a lack of implementation, a lack of execution, where they're just dropping the ball and letting these other guys sneak through.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. A nice, I mean, there's activity going in the search engine space.
And I will say that, I've been. I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Perplexity continues to impress me. I will start playing with ChatGPT a little bit more, but I've had it now a couple of times where I've just dropped in the most obscure stuff into Perplexity and it figures it out, it understands it, and it just gives me the right answer, which, and the right answer with citations, which I think is the single most important part of any search engine result these days, especially if you're going to throw some kind of meta-analysis on top of it, whether it's being, the old Google summaries or an AI interpretation or whatever. You've got to have the citations that will let the searcher confirm that what they're seeing is what they intend, is actually accurate.
Getting away from AI for a second, I had an interesting little debate thing going on in my world here based on a video I did. But the video is based on a new feature that was added to iOS 18 for the iPhone. And that's the ability to do call recording. Now,
Right.
call recording isn't anything new, and there were ways to do it using apps. There were very poor ways because, you just want to make a nice regular phone call with your iPhone using the phone app, and you can't really use that. You have to use another app, and then you have to make the call through another system. It's a whole thing. So Apple finally added the ability to just start call recording in the phone app, just default functionality, right?
Right.
Now, when you do this, it's very easy to do. Like in the phone app, there's just a button. You could just be talking to somebody, hit that button, and then it comes up with a little thing. You want to do call recording? Yes, you do it, and it starts recording the call. And it's very nice because first it starts recording, and then it takes you to a note in the Notes app, and the Notes app shows that it's recording the call, and you could take notes at that point. And then when you're done with the call or you stop call recording, it actually transcribes the call. So you end up not just with an audio file, but with a transcription as well, which is really nice and has all sorts of interesting things. Tech support, for instance, you want to make sure that you understand everything correctly or be able to repeat what's going on, whatever. But there's one feature of it I didn't mention, and that is when you hit the record button to go, the both people hear a voice say, "This call is being recorded."
Right.
So the other person knows it's being recorded. Now, the interesting thing is there's been a bunch of reactions to that I've seen. First, there's people that says, "Oh, good, oh, good, it does that." Some people are happy because it'll mean the other person will be on their best behavior
Yep.
if they, as soon as they turn that on, which is, if you're calling some sort of contentious situation. Just turning that on could mean the other person really has to think before they speak, and who knows, you might have a good phone call instead of a bad one. And other people say, "Oh, is there a way to turn that off? Is there an option to turn that off?" And my explanation is, without any, Apple didn't really say much about this, but my explanation is, well, in the United States, there are 50 states. Each one has different laws about recording phone calls. As I understand it, I think 11 of them are all person consent. Which means that everybody on the phone call has to consent to the call being recorded. The
Right.
other 39 are one person consent. And the one person can be you. In other words, you can secretly record a phone conversation in your state. So the announcement kind of fulfills the legal requirement for all 50 states because it's telling everybody that the call is being recorded. Now, there's a bunch of interesting things here. A lot of people say, well, what happens if I'm just calling somebody and they're in my state or in another state where it's just single call consent? Can I turn it off? Well, how would you know? Like, how would the iPhone know where the other person is located? It doesn't. That's the thing. There's no way it can't. It can know where you're located to a certain point. I mean, you could trick it if you really want to, but this is your phone and it's your app and it's your phone call. So you're probably not trying to trick, any of those things. So it could reasonably say, yeah, according to GPS location, everything else, I know what state you're in. But the other person, no way of knowing. The area code doesn't mean anything anymore. People now regularly move, they take their AT&T Verizon phone, move to a different state and keep their phone number. And it's perfectly fine. I run into this all the time, especially if you have like any, you ever get like an Uber or a Lyft? There seems to be a pretty high percentage of people that do gig economy jobs like Uber and Lyft who have recently moved to a state like mine, like Colorado, where there's a lot of people moving to Colorado all the time. So yeah, you get, the phone number that's associated with your Lyft or Uber is usually like, some bizarre area code. It's like, well, they must have moved from New York recently or whatever.
The
So
other
yeah,
thing
you
is
can't use that.
there are phone services where, like Google Voice, if you sign up for a Google Voice number, you get to choose your area code.
So the area code means nothing. Somebody tried to point out that it doesn't matter what state the other person is in. If you're in a one state, a one consent state, and you're doing the recording, it's fine. But in fact, I looked it up because I was like, oh, well, maybe that's true. Maybe I'm wrong. Nope. Turns out California specifically has a court case saying it does matter. You can't call somebody from like one of our states into California and record the call without their consent. You'd be breaking California law. I don't know if you care about that or not, but you would. They have determined that that's true. So it's interesting. And then, oh, there's a whole other aspect to it. Is like even if there weren't any laws at all about this, I think Apple would still do it because Apple's about privacy, right? They make a big deal about being
It's the
about
right thing
privacy.
to do, yes.
Yeah, can you imagine if there were no laws about this, but Apple just let you record, like the headlines would all be on all the different sites is like Apple, huge privacy breach. Apple call recording allows you to secretly record anybody without letting them know. It would be like a big privacy thing. All the privacy bloggers would be like, Apple needs to stop this. This is horrible. There would be all these posts about how to avoid phone calls from people with iPhones. How to tell if the person calling you is on an iPhone where they could breach your privacy by, recording without telling you, all the stuff. So I don't think Apple even cares that much about the laws because it doesn't get past that. It gets right to the point where it's like, well, we should tell people. Anyway, there's still people saying, oh, I'd love to be able to secretly record people. This is a useless feature without being able to secretly record somebody. And I don't know, I disagree. I mean, both you and I are pretty, we're pretty moderate on privacy because there's some pluses and minuses to things. But even being moderate on privacy, I have to say, no, secretly recording somebody is not a good privacy practice. You don't want it to
So
happen to you, so don't do it to somebody else.
I know exactly what the scenario is where people want it, and honestly, I want it too. That is, if I'm calling a customer support number, obviously they always say your call will be recorded for, your call may be recorded for training purposes. Great. I want to be able to do that too. But you know that as soon as they hear this call is being recorded, they're probably instructed to hang up immediately, right?
You
They
think?
don't want to be on record giving you a shitty experience when you're calling customer
Do
service.
you think though? I mean, I've never tried it, but I mean, I think that the individual on the other end is so used to being recorded for everything that they do that they probably don't care.
Right, but as
And
corporate policy, I'm my
corporate
sense is
policy, I
they're
don't
being instructed that yes, we can record the conversation, but the customer cannot.
I'll be interested to hear if that's people's experience
Right,
now that
right.
this is widely available.
The other good part about it, though, is if you start recording during the phone tree,
Yes.
it gets you to the customer service rep. There's nobody to hear the message.
Yeah, somebody pointed that out too. It's like, what's the deal with that? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I guess the idea is that the other party was informed. It's their fault they weren't paying attention
They
that
weren't
there's a
listening.
phone tree and all that stuff.
I did
So,
want to point out that Washington is a two-party consent state,
oh,
so
interesting.
this is stuff that I'm well aware of. And the other thing that just cracked me up is what obviously our conversation right now is being recorded. We're using Zoom to do this.
It is. I'm shocked.
What happens when we can't record the message, but what happens whenever we start to record? We get an audible message that says this call is being recorded. Or if it's being recorded twice, as it is for backup purposes, as we do, we also get a pop-up message that says this call is being recorded. So Zoom has been down this path also for obvious reasons. Even though they're not technically a telephone, they're facing, I'm sure, the same legal issues that the phone
Oh
companies.
yeah. Oh no, I believe they do have to follow the same rules. So, yep. So anyway, it's interesting. It's a neat feature. I don't know if I'd ever use it, but I will recommend to people, like, if you need to call support or something, like, particularly not, I'm not talking about support in terms of like, oh, something's broken, I need to, warranty, whatever, whatever. But like support as in like, I'm calling a helpline and they're going to explain to me how to do something. It could be very useful to record it instead of having to call again 3 weeks
There
later when you need to do it again.
is that, because obviously you can then take the recording, run it through voice recognition, have a nice written up summary of
Well,
what
it's
the issue
already done. Yeah,
is.
the iPhone thing already does the
That's true. Yeah,
transcript.
iPhone will do that for you. I'm actually thinking of more contentious customer service calls
Yeah.
where
Well, I
somebody's
think
not
that's
getting
what.
the support they feel they deserve and they therefore need to record the interaction.
No, definitely. That's I get it. When I do, I tend to favor the online chats
Yes.
and a lot of and I love those because you don't have to have your attention completely used up,
Right.
by the phone call. You don't have to have like a speaker phone on and all that stuff. You can listen to music, you could do other work. You could even get up and leave the room for a minute and come back to see if the chat's been updated, that kind of thing. And almost in all cases, at the end of that, you're given a transcript. I mean, you could obviously copy and paste the whole thing, but a lot of times you're like emailed, like, here's the complete transcript. And I think part of the reason is for that, like, we told you how to fix the problem. Here's the transcript. Please keep that so
And
you don't have to call us again.
if it breaks, we told you what to do, so it must be you who didn't follow the instructions.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so moving on, this is a weird, interesting story. I'm looking for stories, obviously, that aren't AI, right? So I found this interesting rabbit hole I went down the other day that somebody had asked online, can I don't know what it's like in Washington, but in Colorado, can you do vinyl license plates? What vinyl license plates are you've got your metal license plate that goes on the back. And some states, like Colorado, require a front license plate.
Washington, too.
Some cars do not come with a front license plate holder.
My car did not.
Yeah, exactly. So the problem is that you end up getting this car and you're like, you have to then go take it sometimes aftermarket and get it fitted for a front license plate, a holder, and then get the metal thing. So a solution in some states is that you get a vinyl license plate instead. That is basically a sticker that goes on the front of the
Oh,
car.
that's kind of cool.
And put it cool, except that it turns out it is not legal in Colorado to have a vinyl license plate. You have to put the metal license plate on that the state gives you. And then I read in the fine print, the only valid license plates in Colorado are the metal license plate the state gives you or a digital license plate. End of story. No explanation for those words. I was like, digital license plate?
Ooh.
What is that? And I looked and searched, and it took me a while to find out what it was, but it's a technology thing, as you could guess. I was wildly wrong in my first excited guess, which was
QR code.
we QR code or an RF, like some sort of radio
Oh,
signal,
yep.
something where you install it, and then police or parking structures or whatever could just know your license
Kind of
plate
like
number instead of having a whistle.
the toll things that you can put in your
Toll thing.
card. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought all of these things. Turns out, no, it's far more literal than that. It is a license plate that fits onto your car that is an e-ink screen. So it's basically a little thicker than a regular license plate, has some technology built into it, displays your license plate numbers in e-ink, including the little stickers. Here in Colorado, we've got a year and a month for
Yeah, I've seen
your,
that.
inspection emissions thing. All of that, it's displayed on this e-ink screen, and it has I forget if it's 4G or I think it's LTE chip in it to be able to send limited communications to do updates. So basically, you spend a bunch of money to get this. It's not cheap. You stick it on your car, you register it with the app, and then all of a sudden the license plate turns on and shows your actual license plate number, shows your stickers, and it's the reason for it. Well, they give the dumbest reason. You can choose the font of the license plate, the numbers, and you can make it black on white or white on black. It's like, woohoo, sign
I
me up,
code,
right?
yes.
But the actual reasons, there are other reasons. First of all, in Colorado, there's theft of the stickers, right? Instead of somebody registering their car,
Interesting.
they'll simply find a way. There's various ways to get that sticker off your car. It's very hard, but they get a sticker off of somebody's car, like a 2025 sticker, and then they stick it onto their license plate. And then you get pulled over a few weeks later, or not, because it just never happens. That's a whole different story. And you find out that your year is missing. Somebody has stolen it. So that's automatic on these. They just appear. Nobody could steal it from you. The other thing is that if somebody steals the whole license plate, you could just go into the app and deactivate it, and it's useless. So there's no point stealing it. You also have the ability to mark your car as stolen. So somebody steals your car, drives off with it, and you say, oh, and then you mark it, and then the license plate changes to the word stolen, which, is kind of neat. That's
I
kind of
suppose.
a neat thing. It's like, good luck. You're like, the license plate isn't valid anymore, and it shows that it's stolen. So, yeah. Anyway, it's just a weird technology. As far as I can tell, the reason Colorado has this is because the company may or may not be Colorado based or has ties to Colorado, and they basically had this push through our legislator and our governor, and they kind of like just added it on to a bill in 2022 or something, just to make it legal. Yes, you can have this, but I'm not sure it's yet available. I've never seen one, certainly. And the website, I wasn't quite sure whether it was like you could sign up for one, and we'll let you know when it's available, or it
Right.
actually was available yet. Anyway, it's kind of neat. I could see it being the very first instance of hearing about this, and 25 years from now, we basically all drive around with license plates that are part of the car, like, have this built in. Like, maybe
Right.
the
Yep.
idea is eventually some company sells this to General Motors, and then within 2 years, every major manufacturer is just putting them on their cars. And then you just, you get your car, and the license plate just blinks on, and there's your thing. Certainly seems like that's our state, at least, spends a ton of money on temporary tags, getting your real tags.
Oh, right.
There's offices, there's people, there's lines, there's a whole thing going on. And if this was digital on cars, it could potentially pay for itself in terms of lower costs. So.
It's interesting. The first thing obviously that comes to mind for me is, okay, it's digital. It's wirelessly connected to some network.
Yeah.
So it somebody's going to hack it. Somebody's going to figure
Yeah.
out a way in and either have a prank, right, where they'll just,
Wow.
put random stuff on people's license plates, or more interestingly, If it really is quote unquote criminal activity, stolen car, ring, whatever, they could change the license plate.
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely the kind of thing where, I mean, it just makes it makes it harder because they have to swap out the license plate if they sell the car, or if they steal the car. Otherwise, it's going to say stolen. Or if they just take it off, there'll be no license plate there, which makes them suspicious.
But if it's hacked, they can hack it to not say
Oh, if they
stolen.
hacked,
Yeah.
yeah, it could be. I mean,
So it
but
relies on the security of the device. I'm not saying that the security can't be good. I'm sure it can.
yeah.
It but
I mean,
nothing's.
the security can be good because it's really the only purpose for it. A lot of times when our security is bad, it's because it's like the purpose of this thing is it's an ice maker. We didn't really put much thought into security because it's an ice maker, and now people's ice makers are getting hacked. But when
Get
it's
my
like
home
a,
to a floor full of ice, yes.
yeah, and but when it's like this, it's like no, the main purpose of this is to be more secure than regular license plates. So our first thought is how do we make it very secure? And I'm not saying it can't be hacked, but it, you can make it so hard, so much trouble that the solution is simply just take it off or cover it with something.
Right.
And, in which case, but there could also be GPS built into these. I mean, if it's built into the car already has GPS. I don't know. It's just interesting. It's a part of our world that is stuck in technology that is more than 100 years old. That may actually just have taken a leap forward.
So the most recent leap here in the state of Washington, and I don't remember how many years ago this was, our license plates used to be, I guess it would be embossed, right?
Yeah.
They were letters that stuck out from the metal. Now they're printed. They're printed on metal, but they're printed, so they're flat. I still, to go all the way back to the beginning of this conversation, I did not realize that vinyl existed anywhere. And I just love that as an idea because, like you said, those tabs that you put onto your license plates today, they are super sticky. I mean, you really want to make sure you get it in the right place the first time. And I could see, if you had a license plate, a vinyl license plate that was that sticky, then it seems like it would solve a number of interesting problems and still be readable.
Even if it was just the front license plate that was allowed to be vinyl, because the idea a lot of times that the front license plate is a convenience. It's just being able to like do things like parking garages, toll roads, things like that. It's like it's more convenient if you just have it up there front. Our systems can handle it easily. It's also extremely convenient in the going back to Uber and Lyft. I got reminded of this the other day. We've had a quite a bit of snow here in the last week, and the wife and I went out and took a Lyft, and on our way back from the event, it was snowing, and the car pulled up that kind of matched the description, but the front license plate was covered with snow. So I actually had to do the thing where, it said Lyft Uber in the window. It kind of looks like our car, but I kind of had to do the thing where I waved to the guy to be like, stop. And I gave him like the 1 second. And then I walked over to the back, leaned my head back, and saw the rear license plate did match. And then he
Oh,
was, in fact, my Uber driver. And I was not like bothering some private
thought you were going to
person.
say that you went up to the front of the car and cleaned his license plate
Oh,
for
cleaned
him.
his license plate. Yeah, and I think it's in Nevada where they don't have, if I remember, yeah, I think
Gotcha.
it's Nevada where they don't have fronts, and you try to get a lift there, and it's also very disconcerting if you're used to doing it in other states. You have cars pulling up, and you're like looking for the license plate number, and just to tell, who, you're standing in front of a hotel or something. There's like 15 people getting picked up by Ubers and Lyfts at any given time, and you're like, is that mine? It's weird. But so a vinyl license plate would, it would just be a nice convenience. Make people have like an official or a digital or whatever on the back, make that the real deal, and then let people put, as long as they're not violating the law, like they're not lying, it actually is their number,
And it's visible because, of course,
it's
when you put
visible.
vinyl on there, it's going to wrap around the bumper or something like that. So it still
Yeah,
needs to be
it's got to be
legible.
visible. Yeah, as long as it's visible and it's right, it's correct, then it should be, something. Maybe even it gives the responsibility to you to be like, it has to be visible and correct. And if it starts to wear or comes off, that's your fault, right? If you choose vinyl, you know, that's fine. People would like that. Anyway.
And you go online and order a new one.
Oh, yeah, you could have a, yeah, they should be cheap. You could have a spare one sitting in the car just to slap right on.
All
Yeah.
right. So you've also got the Apple Vision Pro going on here. I've heard some interesting things about it most recently, and that it's not taking off the way they were expecting.
Yeah, the I mean, it's hard to say because we don't really know what Apple really wanted out of the Vision Pro. You know, like was their plan to for this to be a huge hit and everybody want one? Some people point to that's impossible because they did not have the manufacturing capability to deal with that. Like if it had become a huge hit, they still would not have sold more than they've sold now because they've produced as many now as they could have possibly produced, no matter what happened. That's one way of looking at it.
I think I was reading, or what I was vaguely remembering is it had more to do with apps being written for it.
Yeah, there's that. But then there's also like you can look at it both ways too. It's like, you know, I'm frustrated by the fact that there are no big games that you can play on it because the display is amazing, the processor in it should be able to handle anything. But yet, you know, I can't. Why can't I play like a 3D rendered version of Baldur's Gate 3 or something on it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And maybe that's kind of, you know, you could look at it the other way and say Apple was like, no, this is a serious device. There will be games on it eventually, but for right now, you're supposed to buy it and get work done. If you want a toy, get Meta's thing. You know, I mean, that could be, you know, what their attitude is. They are coming out with, you know, Vision OS 2 came out with, you know, the same time as all the new operating systems, but it didn't really have too much that's new. But Vision OS 2.1 or 2.2, whatever the next one coming out is going to expand the Mac display, which is really neat because so right now this is what I use my Vision Pro for primarily, is I put it on when I really want to get serious about work, when I'm like editing my videos, and I bring up a Mac display. It's a, like a 5K display, and I just make it big and right in the center, and I work, and it works great. They are going to actually be giving options to do a wide display. So the same thing, but it's even wider. It's like not quite two screens. And then they're going to do this ultra wide wraparound display, which looks incredible. You know, they're actually making it curved. So it will take up like a good portion of your view. And you just be able to just put all sorts of Mac windows everywhere and do all sorts of work. So I can't wait for that. It is in beta now, but since I only have the one Apple Vision Pro and I like it enough to actually be using it all the time, I've refrained from loading betas on it. So I'm going to wait for the real thing to come out, which might be just in a few weeks. So I'm excited about that. Apple's also, there's a lot of rumors about the next version of the Vision Pro, you know, that there might be a cheaper one offered. Maybe by the end of next year, it would be, you know, dumbed down a bit in terms of some features, but you know, with a lower price. So I don't know. We'll have to see. It's I continue to use it for all my video editing, and I like it. It's weird. I have what might be, well, it's the second best display for Macs. I have the Apple Studio display. Apple makes this, you know, Pro display, which I don't have, but the Apple Studio display, it's a fantastic display. It's amazing. But it's not as good as when I wear the Vision Pro. And I have basically the same display more or less, but it's bigger and it fills the room. And I can bring up other windows on the Vision Pro so I can have mail and messages up and other windows outside of this display. And it also, it's like putting, like I said before, it's like putting horse blinders on. I'm focused because I've got this thing strapped to my head and there's my Mac screen. I'm going to work. I'm not going to get distracted, right? I've actually taken to closing my door and locking it in my office when I put it on because we have a cat. And the cat knows when I put the thing on that it's extra fun for him to bother me. Because I have a wire attached to me, and it's attached to the battery, which is attached to the, you know, cable.
Yeah.
So I
Not
can't go
quite yet.
after him. He could run a certain distance from me, and I can't go after him to kick him out of the room. So I just put on the I just locked the door. So that's not just, but it's great. I get so much work done.
Very
Anyway,
cool.
that's my update on the Apple
So
Vision.
the article that you included, it will be including in the show note, had an interesting thing that I cottoned on to real quick.
Yeah.
Quote, Canon is releasing a new spatial lens for the EOS R7. And which is cool. I mean, you kind of sort of expected that kind of high-end photography. But what I thought
Yes.
about it, if you take a look at the lens, the picture of the lens,
Yeah.
it essentially has two lenses. It's got two. So it's basically trying to do 3D, which makes absolute total sense. And what this immediately triggered was scenes in Star Trek from, gosh, probably a couple of decades ago, where they were, for whatever reason, apparently they were still taking still photography, and the camera he whipped out had two bubbles like that, two lenses on it. It was clearly doing stereo. It
Yeah.
just cracked me up that, what we had kind of sort of envisioned 20 or 30 years ago, oh, look, it's becoming reality.
It's interesting. I mean, the Canon thing, you could already take spatial photos and spatial videos with the iPhone. You've got the ability to do it. Obviously, I'm guessing that the Canon is higher quality for probably for video.
Maybe. Yeah,
It's
who knows?
the spatial stuff is, I do try to take some spatial photos every once in a while. First of all, it seamlessly gives you regular stills. So I can take, if I'm going to take one picture of something and I think it's, oh, spatial might look neat, I'll take it knowing that this could be a regular photo too. Like I don't have to take a separate photo to be a regular photo. It looks like on my Mac, just like a 2D photo. It's kind of it neat. It works. It's still kind of like a bit of a novelty. I like panoramas more. Panoramas they're just 2D. There's not 3D. It's not stereo at all. But you're taking this kind of wraparound view, and because you're doing panoramas, most of the stuff you're taking is far away. It's like a vista off, mountain or at the top of a building. So the 3D part isn't that important anyway. And it feels more immersive because it's surrounding you, whereas the spatial images and spatial video is like this box that's in front of you that it just happens to be 3D. But it's a very just it's not big. It doesn't feel immersive. It's like a little somebody holding one of those, like when we were kids, you remember people had those 3D little photos that you would just turn the photo a little bit and it would reflect light a
Oh,
different way. Yeah.
yep.
It feels kind of like that, except, obviously it's much more, there's much more depth to it than just, two or three variations. But yeah, it's cool. I wish there was more. I wish there was like, I don't know, more, like I wish you could get a, or wish, I don't even want it myself. I just wish there was a rig where you could easily produce video that was totally immersive, like some of the stuff Apple has as examples, and then people actually were making content with it. It doesn't have to be narrative, dramatic content. Like it could just be, going on a hike or hang gliding or whatever. I just want there to be lots of it, like enough that I could search for an experience and there would just be that online. Right now, nobody's really come up with that yet. There's just a few things here and there. It's very finite.
So we've reached a threshold. We must talk about AI.
Yes. Okay. Cool. So Amazon is doing this thing in Prime Video. I think this is a good use for AI. I think Prime Video is going to let you use AI to get a recap of what you're watching. I think this is really cool use of AI. It doesn't quite work very well in terms of like using ChatGPT or something for it, unless the show is old. But I've done it before. I've actually asked ChatGPT about older TV shows, things that were from the past that we happen to be watching right now. Like who is this character or what happens, what happened before in an earlier version because I'm missing something, that kind of thing. And ChatGPT is actually pretty good at doing that. But what this thing built into Amazon Prime will do is it will catch you up on the show. So if you take a break from a show or you can't remember what happened last season, you'd get these little summaries. I think that's a good use for it. Probably something that maybe all the platforms could have, or
I
maybe
was looking
somebody could build it on a website or something.
at the article you linked in the show notes, and unfortunately, right now, it's currently available only on the Amazon Fire TV Stick, I
Yeah.
think it is. And it's got some limited rollouts on other platforms. I'm assuming it'll show up on Roku eventually, which is I
Yeah.
probably the biggest next, the next biggest platform, maybe Samsung TVs. But yeah, I mean, we've certainly run into that situation where, especially between seasons, lately, especially partly due to the writer's strike, but also partly due to just the way production happens, it can be a long time between seasons. And you don't really want to rewatch the prior season,
No,
or
yeah.
necessarily even the prior episode. And the recap that's presented, they're mixed, right? Some are really good. Some give you a nice wrap up of everything that happened. Some of them basically make all sorts of assumptions. And of course, then there's the recap that doesn't exist. So, yeah, I really like this idea of having, and like you said, this is a good use of AI. It's not gathering information, it's summarizing information, and it's really good at that.
Yeah, AI is a good TV watching companion. For instance, I just used it last night. As I mentioned before, my wife and I are watching, going through Star Trek Next Generation, which is such an excellent show. We're loving it. And we just got through the episode where Kelsey Grammer makes a surprise appearance at the end. And we asked each other, what was that about? Why was Kelsey Grammer on like 1 minute at the end of Star Trek? And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna find out. And I brought up this a search engine to search for like the IMDb episode and to go look at the trivia for the episode where somebody's probably mentioned it. And I said, well, no, wait a minute. And then I hit option space to bring up my little ChatGPT prompt. And just asked the question, why was Kelsey Grammer on an episode of Star Trek? And got the whole explanation in two paragraphs. Oh, he's a fan. He asked if there was an opportunity. An opportunity came up, and he was on for the end of an episode.
So I don't recall the episode. Was he playing a captain of some sort?
Yes, it was the episode they got into a time loop. Which was, interesting because, time loops are such a common trope now. But this 1991 or 1992 episode would have been pretty early, after Groundhog Day and stuff, for there to be a time loop in a sci-fi series. So they were in a time loop where the end of the loop happened where another ship collided with them, and they all died, and then the time loop started over again, and they had to figure out how to get out of the time loop.
Right.
And at the when they did get out of the time loop, and all the other ship ended up being a 80-year-old Starfleet vessel that had been stuck in the time loop for much longer than the Enterprise, which was stuck in it for like 17 days.
I remember now. Yes, that's funny.
Yes, and that was Kelsey Grammer was the captain of that ship. And apparently it was a surprise when the episode first aired, and it was a surprise to the because he never appeared on screen with anybody else.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it was they didn't even know that that's who they were talking to in the dialogue at the end of the episode until the episode aired. But of course that surprise doesn't happen anymore because streaming platforms like Paramount Plus will pick out the frame from the episode that it thinks will get the most reaction and the most
Right.
watches.
Yep.
And that frame shows Kelsey Grammer's face in a Starfleet uniform. Which is correct in it would probably get the most people to actually say what and watch that episode. But it
Spoiler.
spoils
Yeah.
the surprise. So, anyway.
So I wanted to talk very briefly about, gosh, part of me wants to call this an extortion scheme. It's not. It absolutely is not, but it kind of feels that way. And it's one of those things where it sure would be a shame if some malware landed on your unpatched PC after October of next year. What's happening is that for the first time, Microsoft has announced that they are going to provide extended security updates, literally ESU is their acronym of choice, for home users by using Windows 10 Home and Pro. And it's for 1 year. They can extend it for 1 year for $30. And I wrote an article about it this afternoon. It's an interesting concept. In a lot of ways, I've long felt that people who are running Windows 10, who are unable to upgrade to Windows 11, or who just don't want to upgrade to Windows 11, can still continue to use Windows 10 after the end of support date next year. But they need to take on just a little bit more responsibility about their security. This ESU, in a sense, it's like your car's extended warranty. It's basically $30 for another year of protection. Protection against what? We don't know. In case something happens, in case there's malware, in case there's a security vulnerability found. What's really interesting about this is that corporations and enterprise versions of Windows have had this for a long time. Companies with big wallets and deep pockets have been able to get this kind of stuff in previous versions for a long time. This is the first time that Microsoft has deigned to make it available to end users. And what I think one of the reasons is the hardware requirements for Windows 11. There are machines right now running Windows 10 that are incapable of running Windows 11, and Microsoft has gotten a lot of flack for that. Of course, the conspiracy theories are out in force saying that, well, Microsoft is colluding with the hardware manufacturers to force people to buy new computers, which of course is absolutely not true, simply because Windows 10 will just keep working. It just won't be getting security updates, but it'll keep working. But anyway, I just found this thought this was kind of an interesting, and I loved the analogy to we've been trying to reach you to talk to you about your car's extended warranty. Now we've been trying to reach you to talk about your PC's extended warranty. We'll see how it plays out. They haven't set up sign up or anything like that yet. They just talked about it. They set a price on it. It will be available for signing up supposedly when the actual deadline, which is mid-October of next year, gets closer.
And that's, of course, an extremely common theme in the Mac world is the whole built-in obsolescence. All the evil things Apple is doing to get you to buy a new Mac, iPhone, iPad, just constant, you hear that a lot. But the record doesn't, the record, of course, shows that Apple is improving things, but I'm not sure how they're supposed to improve things without triggering that same feeling. It's like Apple's
Backward
supposed to say,
compatibility only goes so far. Yeah, there's something that you're going to improve, like the additional hardware security required for Windows 11. No, yeah, I mean, it's additional hardware, and it's just not something you find on older machines. So does that mean they're not supposed to try and be more secure? Of course not. Anyway.
Anyway, one last story
Sure.
here.
Yeah.
It's kind of timely. Surprisingly, in the last week, alternative non X Twitter social media networks have been growing a lot. And the two that I am on that have been growing, one is Blue Sky, which is I'm trying to kind of engage as my main one. I kind of like how they're not as algorithmic as the others. It just feels a little bit better over there. I don't know. So Blue Sky, announced that they got 1 million new subs in the last week, which is a lot. Until somebody else pointed out that Threads has got 1 million new subs per day in the last week. Of course, Threads has the huge advantage of being Meta, and basically being an offshoot of Instagram, which of course and also related to Facebook. So having a lot more going, whereas Blue Sky is kind of all by itself; it's its own thing. But both of those platforms, and I've noticed also. Because I've tried in the past, I've been on both those platforms for at least 2 years. Well, Threads 1 year plus, whenever they launched, and Blue Sky for before that. And I have noticed that, I've tried to get engagement going there. I've tried to like post things, do I get responses or whatever? And I've noticed in the last week that I'm getting a lot more engagement. So it seems to be just beyond the numbers, beyond actually just saying, oh, they're growing. I'm actually seeing a change with my modest accounts. in terms of, I think I'm only like at 300 some followers on Threads. Yet most of the stuff I'm posting is getting a bunch of likes and a few comments, which feels good because it's been a while since I've seen any social media engagement. Probably really stopped using the site formerly known as Twitter several years ago. And I, feel that it has been that long since I've, I just post to these sites and it's just like, it just goes out there and I don't get anything back. And now suddenly I'm getting something back on both Blue Sky and Threads, but in particular on Threads, probably because a little larger following, it's a larger network. And unfortunately, a lot of the bad things about social media networks are coming over to these because of the growth.
Of
I've
course.
noticed on Threads, a lot of posts are what I would call engagement bait.
Yes.
So they're not clickbait because you're already looking at it. You don't have
Right.
to click anything, but they're engagement bait, posing something that's making it hard for you to resist responding. You want to chime in with like, I don't agree, or I do agree, or you've obviously misunderstood something. And I'm not talking about political. I'm talking about like even in tech
Oh,
or
sure.
just cultural, it's like, no, I think you missed the point of that episode or whatever that TV show was. And then you start responding and you realize, oh, I think they know they've missed the point.
And I
They
just
just
fell
know
for it.
they're going to get more people responding if they say that. So there's some of that. And also, speaking a little bit more politically, I've noticed a lot of social media stuff, not just on those sites, but also in places like TikTok, where the algorithm is showing you stuff that you want to see or hear.
Right.
So basically, confirming your predictions or confirming your emotional state. And it's showing you a lot of that, and it doesn't accomplish very much. Because it's just basically somebody else saying, I feel the same as you, or I'm going to give you some good news. If you've been worried about this, I'm going to give you some good news. And it's like, yeah, but I don't think you're doing it because you're actually like, you have good news to share. I think you're doing it because you're targeting me.
Right.
Anyway, it's interesting. This is kind of the bookend to this episode here. I think search engines they've been stagnant and now there's some movement, things are changing. And I think social media has been a bit stagnant. And now there's actually some movement and things are changing. So,
So I've went ahead
what do
and
you?
threw into the show notes my own LinkedIn bio page.
Yeah, I will too. Yeah.
And that's got links to all of the socials that I'm on, and I'm on most of them. In a lot of times, I'm paying attention for engagement. I'm not seeing as much as you are,
Yeah.
but nonetheless, I'm trying to figure out which ones are worth spending my time in. I'm automated a lot of the posting, so when I make a the YouTube shorts I've been playing with lately and some other things, or even if I, am posting something humorous related to Ask Leo. I'll try to throw it out to those socials as well automatically, just to see if there's any engagement and see where I should be spending my time. The one thing I know is that Facebook is not the place for me to be spending time. Uh,
Yeah, I'm
they
not
they
not
they yanked
there,
another
not.
of my posts the other day for no reason at all. So
Oh, yeah.
enough of that.
Cool.
All righty. So what's cool this week? I'm going to continue our Star Trek theme since we went there.
Okay.
I have been watching Star Trek Prodigy, which is an animated one. It is in conjunction with Nickelodeon, so you know that it's actually aimed at a younger audience. But honestly, I'm just enjoying it. It's fun. It's light. I will absolutely admit to myself looking for escapism these days, and this absolutely fits the bill. I've been, watching it on my laptop when I've got a few minutes, watching while I'm exercise when I've got some other time. So, it's just fun. It's a Star Trek universe. It's got Captain Janeway from Voyager and Voyager. It's got Chakotay from her crew. It's got a few other notables. Most recently, the episode like 3 episodes back might be the fifth or sixth episode of the current season, Wesley Crusher shows up. And
Oh, cool.
yes, he's the Will Wheaton is doing the voice for that, as one
Great.
should.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I want to throw out Umbrella Academy. It's in its final season. I've only watched one or two episodes of that final season yet, but it has once again engaged me. I'm enjoying it. It's unique science fiction slash fantasy. It's a very interesting story that we've not run into elsewhere. I may have mentioned it on previous podcasts. That is the other one that I am escaping to time to time.
Cool. I'll
Both
mention
run
a
Netflix. Both run Netflix, by the way.
I'll mention a book. We've talked about Neal Stephenson's books many times in the years we've been doing the show. He has a new book out, and he is starting a series of historical fiction. He's done that before. He did a series called the Baroque Cycle. That was like three or six books, depending upon how you measure it. That was about 18th century scientists and engineers and adventurers. Some fictional versions of real people, some completely made up people. And it was a fascinating little universe he created for that. So he has started a new one. And this one takes place in early 20th century. And it goes back and forth between Western United States, actually throughout the United States, come to think of it, and the Soviet Union, early Soviet Union, with a primary character. So, and it's like all of his other stuff, it's a kind of a drama with characters in it, but there's science in it. And, dealing with science, and then the characters will get into deep discussions about the science of the time, and some of the stuff you can look up and say, oh, this event actually happened. That thing that he's describing was real. And then some of the stuff you look up and say, oh, no, that place doesn't exist. It never existed. He made that up. It's kind of fascinating. Anyway, it's the first book of I don't know how many in this series, but I'm hoping because I remember with the other series, he wrote them pretty fast. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll dive in. I'll read this first one. And then hopefully sometime in 2025 there'll be the next one and so on.
Very cool. Did you name it?
Yes, it's called Polo Stan. Because
Cool.
and actually Stan having a little Soviet Union naming there in
Gotcha.
Polo because Polo actually plays a part in the story.
Oh, how bizarre.
Polo
Does
Stan.
the series have a name?
It does, and I will tell it to you in a minute. It is called the Bomb Light Cycle. Bomb Light Cycle.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, Baroque Cycle, Bomb Light Cycle, I guess is going with
Interesting.
the thing.
Okay.
It would be interesting to see if it ties into any future books because the neat thing about the Baroque Cycle was there were characters in it that were referred to in a Cryptonomicon.
Yes,
And
I've
then
noticed
if
that for some
you.
of his books, the characters will actually
Yeah.
show
And
up.
it was a specific universe that Cryptonomicon was the first book with those characters, and then the Baroque Cycle had them had there was references back and forth, and then there were a couple of books afterwards that then tied back into Cryptonomicon and the Baroque Cycle and all that. But then that's unrelated to the rest of his books, which can't possibly exist in the same universe because there are contradictions and things that have happened. So it'd be interesting to see if Polo Stan, the Bomb Light Cycle, ties in with anything else he's written, or perhaps is completely by itself, or maybe in the future he'll write some books about. I mean, it's weird because it's early 20th century, so it's not that distant from today, like the Baroque Cycle was taking place, like in 1714 and such.
Cool. In terms of self-promotion, I've got an interesting article that we've talked about Paskies a couple of times here, and Paskies are very confusing to a lot of people, and I get that. There's a lot of pushback. But as it turns out, you could actually simulate going passwordless without having to go passwordless. And it's an interesting exercise in understanding all the different ways that you could potentially sign into your account without a password. And it's a good exercise if you just want to experiment and understand how you might live in a world like that without passkeys, right? No passkeys involved here, but just all of the other ways that you would sign in, because without passwords, you need a way to basically kickstart the sign-in process that doesn't involve a password and doesn't involve a passkey that you haven't set up yet. So anyway, Going passwordless without going passwordless. It's askleo.com/175103.
And I'll just have a link to my video that I mentioned earlier on how to record calls on your iPhone with iOS 18. Yeah.
Well, I think we did it. I think that's another week's worth of TEH podcast. As always, thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you here again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh235. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com, and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com.